everyone to a fabulous new Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. We have another wonderful show to be sharing with you, a fabulous summer blockbuster. Joining us today to talk to us about this show are two of the people behind the show. First of all, we've got the playwright Joe Tristino and then the co-producer David Lanson. They're here to talk to us about their show, Bringer of Doom, which is playing July 25th through August 25th at the Players Theater. You can get your tickets and more information by heading to theplayerstheater.com. This is a really exciting show, especially if you love a good summer thriller of sorts, and we can't wait to learn more about it. So why don't we go ahead and bring on our guests to do that? Joe, David, welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Oh, thank you for having us.
Thank you. Pleasure.
I am so thrilled to be having you here today. I'm so thrilled to be talking about this piece. And I love the fact that this is being pitched as a summer blockbuster. I mean, you got to love that. So I want to start with you, Joe. You're the playwright of this show. Can you tell us a little bit about what Bringer of Doom is about?
Sure. So Bringer of Doom is a play. It's a comedy. Some may call it a dark comedy, I guess. I mean, I prefer more existential comedy. And it's about a woman who enlists the help of an ex stand-up comedian, dissolute alcoholic stand-up comedian, to roast her mother and her mother's boyfriend over dinner for reasons that are revealed in the story. And that's essentially the premise of the show. And then as things go, they take a very sort of absurd turn, and it takes place basically over the course of a night, of an evening. So it's a domestic comedy, but it gets into really kind of, I think, more profound issues. And, you know, someone early on described it as, actually an actor who did one of the early readings, described it as a mix between a sitcom and Greek tragedy. So that's kind of been my kind of shorthand for what this thing is, you know? Yeah. And that's it. And it's a two-act play, 90 minutes. And hopefully you come out of there with lots of laughs in your belly and lots of ideas in your head.
I love that. So thriller may have been the wrong description of this. It's thrillingly funny.
It's thrillingly
funny. Better.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what we meant. There's no one on jet skis shooting machine guns at drug dealers, you know, on Miami, you know.
But it is early. I mean, there's always time to add that in.
That's true. There can be changes. Yeah, we'll get a jet ski in there.
Well, I love the premise of the show and the way and the story that's being told, because I mean, who hasn't thought about roasting their mother? You know what I mean? In a comedy sense, let's be clear about
it. Yeah. Not actually over fire. Yeah.
Or support.
Although, you know, family.
I'm curious to know, Joe, where did you come up with the idea for the show?
Oh, God. At this point, I don't know if I even know. You know, I think the initial, like, you know, as a writer, you know, and you know, you just come up with seeds of ideas and you start to explore ones you like, and then, you know, it builds and builds. And this was just that original seed of the idea was the premise that I just told you about. And it just appealed to me. I thought it could be funny, you know, or it could, at least I could make an attempt at it being funny. And I just kind of started exploring the story and the characters out of that. And, you know, yada, yada, yada. I had a finished draft, you know, at some point, and the pandemic helped speed that up, because that gave time. I mean, I was, you know, the small production company I was working at shut down, and so I was able to finish it, and so it just kind of was a very small idea that I just sort of explored, and it's not based on real life in any way. I love my mother, and I would never do this to her. So yeah, it was just a funny idea that I decided to build on, or an idea that I thought was funny, you know.
That is fabulous. I do love the little asterisk that you've thrown in there. We're gonna have to probably keep throwing that in all show, since this is an audio, not a written one.
Yeah,
we're pro that. Mom interview. We're very pro.
Yeah,
mom.
And my mom might hear this, so you know, I just want to. You know.
My mom definitely will. So love you, mom.
I'm in the same boat as well. David, I want to bring you in as the co-producer of this show. How did you come upon this work?
Well, I have been very good friends with Joe for better parts of a decade now, and I've actually been able to be the lucky recipient of many of his scripts. I've been throughout
Dave,
various
Dave is an
times.
Actor by trade and a fantastic one. I just want to throw that in, and that's how we kind of knew each other. Go, sorry, Dave, go ahead.
That's absolutely true. Joe and I first met working on a web series. It was like 11 or 12 years ago, something like that.
Yeah.
I was a performer and he was the one writing the entire series. We had a mutual friend crossover and we've been buddies since. And, you know, throughout, you know, every couple of months or so, Joe would be kind enough to share some of his work with me, stuff that he was working on. And this particular one, I remember Joe sent to me when I was doing some walking tours in the West Village. And one particular night after a tour ended, I had a beer and I read this play, which was at the time probably like, what, 60%? Completed. And yeah. I was laughing my head off. And Joe's stuff is always profound, very funny, unbelievable. But this script just had something about it that, like, the premise alone, like that he just described to you, it automatically just rang. I don't know. It was so funny and so unusual to me. And I reached out to Joe and I told him, like, you finish this show. This is really good, above and beyond even the normal amount of incredible that you produce. And he ended up finishing the work very quickly. Remember, that turnaround was really fast. And I suggested chopping it to a couple of places, which he sent it out and got really a great responses, and actually got one from the Players Theater, which is where we were making our home for this summer, actually. Yeah.
That is fantastic. Now, is this the world premiere of the show?
No, it is not. We had an original off-Broadway run last April. Ran 3 weeks at the upstairs at the Players Theater at their Black Box. And so that technically was the premiere of the show anywhere. So yeah. And then, but this is the second premiere. This is the off-Broadway premiere. So yeah, that was its first ever anything, was that run last year there.
Wow. That is, what a wonderful treat to be able to premiere and then come back to the same space, you know. That's so wonderful.
Yeah, the main stage, you know, which is great, you know. So instead of, you know, and the Players Theater is amazing, and, you know, all Black Box theaters everywhere are amazing, but, you know, you don't have to sneak upstairs to an attic and watch the play. You can come right in off the street, and, you know, there's a box office and everything. So it feels, you know, it feels like a more of a premiere, but the technical premiere was that run last year.
Very cool. David, what has it been like developing this particular iteration of Bringer of Doom?
It's unbelievable journey. You know, I often tell people, I mean, my day job is as an actor, and for Joe as a writer, we've never, this is, we're embarking now on the second leg of our journey of producing a play. And that's bringing up all kinds of incredible opportunities for us as creatives, and also challenges of it. You know, I always kind of summarize it like this, is like, as an actor showing up for work and doing your job, it involves kind of this one note of the entire process, and producing along with Joe, it's incredibly rewarding, but you kind of realize, I never took for granted what people had to do for any production I was involved in, but especially now, I have an unbelievable amount of respect for all the spinning plates that are involved. And it has been the most rewarding thing I've done creatively in 20 years of being an actor in New York. There's nothing that touches bringing people together in a story that you really, truly believe in and that you enjoy so much. I mean, there's not an ounce of this show that I'm tired of. I'm always, always game and hungry to get further into it and get deeper into it. And that fuels the entire journey. So all the cool complications of producing a show and organizing it and hiring folks and getting the space and even the joy, we're so lucky to be at the Players because the ownership team there has been so collaborative with us, and they've been so open and inviting. We're just feel really lucky, really grateful to be a part of it, and to have this opportunity to open up in their main stage. Because when we were doing the Black Box space, it was great. We would come down after the show feeling so excited about, you know, another performance, and we'd see all these people coming out of the main stage space. And we just, as a backwards, like in the back of our heads, just thinking, how great would it be to be in that theater? And now that we find ourselves there, we're so stoked. We're so excited about it.
Yeah, I mean, us as producers, it's funny, and Dave touched on it, like us as producers of the show, it's like almost accidental or maybe even incidental, you know, like the opportunity that came along from the players was like, hey, you know, we have this kind of residency. It's a sort of self-production residency. We really love the show. We love the script. And we want to give you the opportunity to do it, you know? And that's what, and the first guy I turned to was Dave, you know, and he's like, hey, do you want to just embark on this with me? You know, can we put this together, you know, as, and as he said, he's an actor, I'm a writer. That's what we do. We're on our own kind of avenues when it comes to that. So, but the idea of just, I guess, having full kind of creative power over a show, you know, and seeing it come to fruition just became like, all right, well, producing is a means to an end of that. So, you know, we're kind of the accidental producers here. But again, the control that we have over every aspect is the upside and, of course, the downside when it comes to responsibility. Yeah, it's an interesting adventure for sure. And it's something unlike anything I've ever been a part of, you know.
I should add that I'm very lucky to have Joe having asked me to be a part of it. It was from the ground up, man. It's been a phenomenal experience to do this with a good friend. So it's also a big part of it.
Yeah, mutual. It's definitely mutual. It's a love fest between us, you know. If there's going to be, I wish there was more drama here, you know. But
that's the next half hour. Yeah, there's no drama at all. It's just all love.
Not Hall & Oates, you know.
We stay tuned to it when we pull the curtain back and start to dig into the meat and potatoes and
right.
Yeah. Share the fly. And
behind the show, the scandal. Yeah, no, none of that. Right. So. Yeah, we're just huge fans of each other and we're friends, you know, so.
I love that. Well, Joe, I want to ask you as the playwright, is there a message or a thought that you hope audiences take away from this show?
Oh, God. You know, it's funny. It's a question that's like always intimidating to me because like to me as a writer, it's like when I'm writing something of my own, it's just, I'm just exploring, you know, and I'm asking questions all the time. And it's not even that I'm coming up with answers. It's just these questions are producing stories. So, you know, I don't have an overriding message, I think, but what, I guess the one thing is that, I guess what I would want people to take away from this is that I think comedy can be a tool, you know, to explore any and all things about being human. You know, no matter how profound or dark or uncomfortable or obscene or, you know, the subject matter may be, is that we can use humor to just dive into any of that. And comedy really, you know, it excels with the mundane in life. You know, Seinfeld are one of a million examples of that, you know, but it can be used, I think, to explore bigger stuff and still be funny and still be comedic. You know, I don't want to build this as a dramedy. And not that there's anything wrong with that, because there's some fantastic, what you would call dramedies, you know, I guess, out there. But, you know, this is a comedy. And so, we, you know, that we don't really, there's not a lot of sentiment. But there, again, we're touching on, I think, stuff just about the stuff of being human that I think is interesting to explore in that way. So, yeah, I guess for someone who doesn't have a message, that's my message. Is that this is hopefully is an example of that, you know.
After that first run, I think we got so much feedback from people about what they got out of it. And it was so disparate. Everyone had something. It was really different from one person to the next. People who knew us, they were familiar with the story leading up to the production, but then people who knew nothing. And everyone seemed to have, because there's aspects in the story, you know, familial strife and even professional frustrations within the show. There's a lot of different elements. And I think we kind of decided as Skimble Scamble, which is the name of our production company, our ethos is just bring humor, laughter.
Yeah.
We want people to laugh. And of course, there are elements weaving in and out of the story itself that deal with other, you know, topics and themes. But overall, it's the humor for us.
Yeah, it's the sugar in the medicine, right? The laughter. Not that anybody puts sugar in their medicine anymore, I think, these days. But, you know, that's kind of I think how we look at it. So hopefully the people that come to see it get that, you know.
I love that, though. That's a wonderful, wonderful thought to be approaching audiences with. David, I want to direct the last question of the first part to you, and that is, who do you hope have access to Bringer of Doom?
Anyone over the age of 17? I mean, we want any theater lover who, I mean, I always describe this as kind of one of a kitchen sink, you know, you can say dramedy or dark comedy, but it's a kitchen sink show. It's four characters. I want people who want to who have any interest in seeing a moment in the life of four people, in this case, in New York City, dealing with a lot of hilarious, dark elements and topics, who want to be entertained for 90 minutes, 95, wherever we're at.
Yeah, I don't know where we're at now, 90, maybe.
Yeah, it might be different. It might be different on a bigger stage, but we want lovers of the theater to come see it. So that's my biggest hope, for sure. We want access for anyone and anyone who can show up.
That doesn't make it sound desperate, does it? No, it's no, he's so dead right about that. You know, like it's like anybody, that's the thing that we want to use with the humor of the show, is like we want to be able to try to hit everybody, you know, with the humor, and that we're all in this crazy, insane show together, the show of life, you know? So yeah, there's, again, other than mature themes that maybe, you know, younger people shouldn't see, it's all fair game, you know?
Please listen carefully.
Second part of our interview, we love to let our listeners get to know our guests a little bit more. And this is the part where we learn the controversy behind the team. Now, we're going to pull the curtain back a little bit more and let our listeners get to know you. And I want to start by asking the two of you, what or who inspires you? What playwrights, composers, or shows have inspired you in the past or are just some of your favorites? And Joe, I would love to start with you first on this.
Oh, I know. This is like, I mean, so you know, it's funny. I came to theater really kind of later in my life, you know, as like a passion. You know, I wasn't until well into my 20s. And up to that, I was, you know, I was a full on, I'm just one of these comedy nerds, you know, and I always was. I mean, I would come home from school like 11 years old. I'd watch Mel Brooks, you know, until the video cassette ran out, History of the World, you know. So my formative years of just like, we're always comedy people and comedy thinkers, like, you know, everyone from like, you know, every writer on The Simpsons and you know, Monty Python to, you know, stand-ups like, you know, Chris Rock, like Bill Hicks, amazing people, Dave Attell. But I think for theater, honestly, you know what? I love Shakespeare, but Twelfth Night for me is a show that inspires me to just write humor for the stage. Like the Malvolio arc in Twelfth Night is like one of the great comedy things ever made, you know, and the fact that it goes sinister practically, I mean, they prank him so bad he's in an insane asylum at the end, you know, in the Elizabethan times, which couldn't be it's twisted, you know. And to me, that's like, that's I think in some kind of nutshell, that's kind of like what the type of stuff I want to do. Not that it would ever be anything near like a Shakespeare, but just that approach. So I'm just going to say Twelfth Night is my answer for that.
I love that.
That is a great, great answer. David, how about you? What or who inspires you?
What an excellent answer, Joe. I want to hear you summarize Shakespeare all the time, by the way. I love that. I love it so much.
Your spark notes.
Spark notes, yeah. Tristino notes. I was thinking about this. I it's hard to theatrically. I know what the foundations are. I have to say, more than anything for me, it's Chaplin. Charlie Chaplin is the reason I'm an actor. It's the reason I'm in the arts. He's the reason I'm a creative, which is like, I was born in 1935, right? It's like, huge Charlie Chaplin fan. There was always Buster Keaton.
I didn't even realize
Harold Lloyd.
Yeah.
Oh no, I remember sitting my family down and begging them to watch the 12-minute movie The Bank, or the 17-minute thriller The Kid, or City Lights, which to this day I think it's the greatest movie ever made. It breaks my heart. It makes me laugh. It's just all the elements I ever want in anything in one. I find him perfect.
That just gave me goosebumps, the City Lights thing. Yeah.
City Lights. And I'm 6'5" guy, and I've always, as a performer, always loved physical comedy. And there's something about Charlie Chaplin's petite, you know, the tramp, that little tiny man, and the way he moved and the way he communicated so well. You know, his classic line is like, to make a comedy, all I need is a girl, a cop, and a park. The simple formula is something I've always loved. But in terms of, I remember being in high school and reading in our little room that we had all the plays. you know, I liked farces. I liked Neil Simon growing up. I love Sam Shepard. Those were the early, early playwrights that really got me loving theater. And of the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years, the playwrights that inspire me and the plays and shows are like people like Adam Rapp, Lucy Thurber. I worked with a playwright named Derek Ahonen in a company called The Amoralists like 10, 12 years ago. Those were people who always kind of pushed the edge. So it's a big reason why I love this show, because there's elements from that, from those shows that I definitely see in this one, and this one kind of improves upon those. So, yeah.
That is a brilliant answer. I love the two of yours comedic inspirations, you know, one Shakespeare, one Charlie Chaplin. I think a lot of audience members think that comedic inspiration comes from something recent. And the fact that you two are inspired by these classic artists is so brilliant. We have to remember that it's really important to go back to the classics to understand how we got here. So I love those answers. Those are really, really good. Let me ask, what is your favorite part about working in the theater? And David, I'm going to start with you first on this.
Well, it might seem like an obvious answer, but it's just the collaborative nature of it. There's a chaos to it that I love. I've always loved. It's kind of why I do this. That's why I could never do a 9-to-5, what other people can do. It's a little too formulaic. It's a little too, you know, not all 9-to-5s. I'm sure there's plenty of people out there, you know, with their heads on fire running around. But that's what I like about, that's what I love about this job. It's collaborative. It's always different, even with the same production. Every day has something else about it that's a challenge, that's a joy. And you get these occasional moments of just complete and total, I don't know, epiphanies that are unlike anything else, you know? I mean, that's, I romanticize it because it's romantic to me. So, yeah.
That is such a lovely answer and so well put too. I think that's one of the reasons why we keep coming back to work in the arts. Joe, how about you? What is your favorite part about working in the theater?
Wow. You know, I mean, I'm still, it's funny because I'm still really like relatively new to the kind of workings of theater. And Dave is a little bit more of a vet in it than I am. But, you know, to me, I think the amazing thing about theater is just the collective, I'm going to just call it the collective insanity that we all willingly participate in as performers, as people putting on shows, as audience members in this. This illusion that we all buy into together when you go to see a show on any particular night, you know, whether you're in the audience, whether you're on that stage, or whether you're behind the scenes, it's this all, it's like we're all in this illusion, delusion together, you know, and in that moment. And it's like a shared mania, you know, for, because if you look at what we're doing objectively, it's just crazy, you know, nuts. I mean, it's like, you know, we're getting up there and pretending to be these people for people. And I can't help but break things down sometimes in that way. So the fact that we all do it, and it's, we don't just do it. It's so, it feels so, you know, innate to what being human is, that I'm just always blown away by that, you know, and, you know, but really, honestly, the whole experience of putting on theater is kind of mind blowing to me still. I hope that never leaves me, but it is still an insane thing to me in the best way possible.
Another lovely answer. We've now arrived at my favorite question to ask guests, and that is, what is your favorite theater memory?
So the one that comes to mind is I was lucky enough to study at the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, and I worked with an incredible, unbelievable, the infamous Jonathan Bolt, who was the director of the Academy Company at the time. And we were doing a production of Arthur Miller's The American Clock, which was a show dealing with the Great Depression, and it was in 2007, and it was right as the financial crisis was culminating. And basically it was unbelievable. It was such a fun show. Got to work with a lot of people who I'm really good friends with still, but it was the experience of doing a show that, I mean, I was playing a guy named, it was Arthur Robertson, and he's basically narrating the collapse of the entire financial sector in the US, right? And it was the first time I'd ever experienced the theater, Arthur Miller having written this 50 years prior, basically narrating and describing something that was happening right then and there in the real world. And the overlap of art and life was kind of terrifying. And it was a daunting thing to do. It was a big show, huge, huge cast, but it was the first time I'd experienced that from the audience or from being on stage. So that I remember opening that show and basically being months away, all of us knowing that things were kind of going badly, but being young enough not to know the extent to which it would affect everyone's life at the time. So yeah, that was the big one for me.
That is quite the memory. Holy cow. Thank goodness you weren't a show about a pandemic, in 2020. That would have been
That would have
Contagion the musical.
weird.
But yeah, that is an incredible memory. Thank you so much for sharing that. Joe, how about you?
Well, I mean, I guess my answer is much more passive than Dave's, and therefore less in depth and less interesting.
No,
But
no, no.
it's as an audience member, and honestly, it was seeing Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart in Waiting for Godot was like, oh, like I felt like a once in a lifetime, just like, I just felt like I was really like privileged to just watch these two guys work. Billy Crudup was in it too, and I forgot the other actor that was in it. But that watching those two work in this and disappear into, Gogo and Dee Dee and everything was just like, I think it was like a seminal kind of moment for me as a playwright, as a thinker of theater, if I even end that. So yeah, that to me is, it just stands out to me. That was like, I feel like a before and after moment for me.
That is amazing. What a show to get to see. That's incredible.
Yeah.
I would pay to watch those two just read phone books.
Yeah.
That would be fine for me. So,
Just hanging on a bench and just doing nothing and drink. I mean, are you kidding,
absolutely. Absolutely. What
That wins,
incredible
man.
memories. Thank you both for sharing those. Well, that leads to my final question, which is if our listeners would like more information about Bringer of Doom or about either of you, maybe they'd like to reach out to you. How can they do so?
Well, the show, you can visit Bringer of Doom, theplay.com, all one word, and that has any kind of up-to-date information right now. More will be coming out as we, just get casting and everything together fully. And then yeah, and you could reach out to us actually through the website as well, any questions or any, thoughts, rants, whatever you
Scream at
want.
us, go for it. You can also reach us at the, I think we have Bringer of Doom on Instagram for those of you on IG.
Oh yeah. That might need some updating, but yes.
Yes.
Wonderful. Well, Joe, David, thank you two so much for taking the time today to speak with me about this fabulous show. I'm so excited to take it in this summer. I'm so excited to enjoy this wonderful, wonderful, thrilling comedy, as we've now called it. And I just appreciate the two of you taking the time to speak with me today. So thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Thank
Thanks
you.
for
Thank
having
you,
us,
Andrew.
Andrew.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much for making the time for us.
Thank you. My guests today have been the playwright Joe Tristino and the co-producer David Lanson, whose upcoming show, Bringer of Doom, is returning to the Players Theater July 25th through August 25th. You can get your tickets and more information in two places, theplayerstheater.com and bringerofdoomtheplay.com, which is also a really great place to get more information about the show and connect with our guests. If you're on Instagram, also hit up their page at Bringer of Doom, and we're going to have all this information posted on the episode description as well as on our social media post. But join us down at the Players Theater right there in the heart of the village, July 25th through August 25th, for this incredibly funny, funny show, Bringer of Doom. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez, reminding you to turn off those cell phones, unwrap your candies.
And keep talking about theater
In a Stage Whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a five-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.